Chapter 15. Yet there is danger in all this. The suppression of premature and base suggestions must not overleap itself, and suppress either mature thought which has been given its hemlock not once, but many times on this particular pretext, or the destruction of necessary common knowledge. If we begin to hunt for suggestion, and in decency it may be urged we shall end, by driving all these things underground. Youth comes to adult life now between two dangers, vice, which has always threatened it, and morbid virtue, which would turn the very heart of life to ugliness and shame. How are we, or to come closer to the point, how is the average juryman going, to distinguish between these three things, between advisable knowledge and corruptingly presented knowledge, and unnecessary and undesirable knowledge? In practice, under the laws I have sketched, it is quite probable the evil would flourish extremely, unnecessary information would be ruthlessly suppressed. Many of our present laws and provisions for public decency do work in that manner. The errand boy may not look at the Venus de Medici, but he can cram his mind with the lore of how ops run after ballet girls, and why Lady X locked the door. One can only plead here, as everywhere, no law, no succinct statement can save us without wisdom, a growing general wisdom and conscience, coming into the detailed administration of whatever law the general purpose has made. Beside our project for law and the state, it is evident there is scope for the individual. Certain people are in a position of exceptional responsibility. The newsagents, for example, constitute a fairly strong trade organization, and it would be easy for them to think of the boy with a penny just a little more than they do. Unfortunately, such instances as we have had of voluntary censorship will qualify the reader's assent to this proposition. Another objection may be urged to this distinction between dolt and general matter, and that is the possibility that what is marked off and forbidden becomes mysterious and attractive. One has to reckon with that. Everywhere in this field one must go wisely or fail. But what is here proposed is not so much the suppression of information, as of a certain manner of presenting information, and our intention is at the most delay, and to give the wholesome aspect first. Let us leave nothing doubtful upon one point. The suppression of stimulus must not mean the suppression of knowledge. There are things that young people should know, and know fully, before they are involved in the central drama of life, in the serious business of love. There should be no horrifying surprises. Sane, clear, matter-of-fact books setting forth the broad facts of health and life, the existence of certain dangers, should come their way. In this matter, books, I would insist, have a supreme value. The printed word may be such a quiet counselor. It is so impersonal. It can have no conceivable personal reaction with the reader. It does not watch its reader's face. It is itself unobtrusively unabashed and safer than any priest. The power of the book, the possible function of the book in the modern state is still but imperfectly understood. It need not be, it ought not, I think, to be, a book specifically on what one calls delicate questions. That would be throwing them up in just the way one does not want them thrown up. It should be a sort of rationalized, and not too technical handbook of physiological instruction in the college library or at home. Naturally, it would begin with muscular physiology, with digestion, and so on. Other matters would come in their due place and proportion. From first to last it would have all that need be known. There is a natural and right curiosity on these matters, until we chase it underground. Restriction alone is not half this business. It is inherent in the purpose of things, that these young people should awaken sexually, and in some manner, and somewhere that awakening must come. To ensure they do not awaken too soon, or in a fetid atmosphere among ugly surroundings is not enough. They cannot awaken in a void. An ignorance kept beyond nature may corrupt into ugly secrecies, into morose and sinister seclusions, worse than the evils we have suppressed. Let them awaken as their day comes, in a sweet, large room. The true antiseptic of the soul is not ignorance, but a touch of the heroic in the heart and in the imagination. Pride has saved more men than piety, and even misconduct loses something of its evil, if it is conceived upon generous lines. There lurks a capacity for heroic response in all youth, even in contaminated youth. Before 25, at any rate, we were all sentimentalists at heart. And the way to bring out these responses? Assuredly it is not by sermons on purity to men only, and by nasty little pamphlets of pseudo-medical and highly alarming information stuffed into clean young hands. Footnote. See Clouston's Mental Diseases, 5th edition, p. 535, for insanity caused by these pamphlets. See also page 591 ASEC. For the lesson, literature. Right bracket, ultra adult, that stuff should be but in the drum, and trumpet style the thing should be done. There is a mass of fine literature today wherein love shines clean and noble. There is art telling fine stories. There is a possibility in the theater. Probably the average of the theater goer is under, rather than over 22. Literature, the drama, art. That is the sort of food upon which the young imagination grows stout and tall. There is the literature and art of youth, that may or may not be part of the greater literature of life, and upon this mainly we must depend when our children pass from us into these privacies, these dreams and inquiries that will make them men and women. See the right stuff as near them, and the wrong stuff as far as possible away, chase cat and quack together, and for the rest, in this matter leave them alone. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.